Hello everyone, I'm Matthew. I'm the lead pastor here at Cedar Ridge. Thank you so much for joining us again this morning. We're actually going to wrap up our series today called Stories of Transformation. And we're going to look at how we can experience change through curiosity and exploration. All of us have doubts, fears, questions about life, about our faith. And that's a normal, healthy part of our faith. And rather than those things holding us back or paralyzing us, they can be positive agents of change in our life as we sort of see ourselves as constant seekers who are always moving into the future with open minds and open hearts to experience more of God. We perhaps have that experience of change because different things happen in our lives, like we might have a crisis of faith or a loss, or we just start asking questions, that are perhaps questions we've not felt empowered to ask before. Maybe we've encountered somebody else with a different set of beliefs, and the quality of their thinking, the quality of their believing, the quality of their lives inspires us, and we're motivated and provoked to think differently about ourselves and our own beliefs. So whatever the cause of it all, it's normal for us to have those kinds of doubts, those kinds of questions. And of course, as a human race, we've been asking those questions for millennia. Like, who are we? Why are we here? Where did we come from? Where are we going? What's the meaning of life? What happens after you die? All these kinds of questions have resulted in us forming over millennia all kinds of different beliefs, and those beliefs eventually forming all kinds of different religions and practices. And one of the challenges, though, of course, of religion is that it tends to make our faith, our beliefs static. We feel we've arrived at the truth, and then we try to preserve that truth, and we set up all sorts of rules and regulations to preserve the truth and guard it and keep people safe within it. And then those rules and regulations begin to take over, and then they become the point of the religion. And its truth, in some respects, can go out the window, or the sort of the honest, authentic nature of our beliefs can go out the window, and we're just more interested in complying with the rules and the regulations. So, Jesus broke us out of that mold, and I think there's good reason for that. When you think about God, I mean, God is unfathomable. God is bigger than our greatest thoughts. The prophet Isaiah in chapter 40 of that book said, "Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom." Everlasting and greater than the ends of the earth. In other words, bigger than space and bigger than time. And we just can't wrap our minds around that completely. So God's bigger, and that means we need to be open, open to exploring and open to expanding our understanding and deepening our experience of God. The Psalms, I love the way in Psalm 105 it says, "Seek the Lord and his strength, seek his presence continually." That sense of continually seeking presence means that there's it's not static. It's dynamic. There's movement there. The assumption is that there's more of God's presence to be experienced. If it needs to be sought continually, we should never be satisfied in that respect. We come from a tradition, of course, when we think about our own religion, and we sort of trace that back to to its Abrahamic roots. We come from a religious tradition that was very much about seeking and journeying and this sense of process in our understanding and experience of God. Back in Genesis 12, where we read about the calling of Abraham, it says, "The Lord said to Abraham, 'Go from your country, your people and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing.' So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran." So here we have, at the foundation of our own tradition, somebody who in the context of Mesopotamian polytheism is spoken to by this unique, different individual God who says, "Hey, uproot yourself from your family, from your location, and just go into the unknown." And perhaps the miracle of that, the sort of most surprising aspect of that, is that Abraham goes, "Okay, I'll do that," and moves out from all that safety and security and all that established cultural tradition into something very new and very dynamic. And that's the nature of our faith tradition. Of course, Jesus came in that tradition. Jesus was always asking questions, always provoking people. Jesus has become pretty safe for us now in many respects. He's perhaps the most famous religious figure on the planet now because of the expansion of Christianity. So Jesus is very much associated with religion and with perhaps also some of the negative aspects of religion, the static nature of religion. But Jesus operated within Judaism, his religion, but he was not part of the institution, if you like. He operated outside of the institution. And that meant that to follow Jesus, two things really. One was you were kind of going into the unknown. This was stepping out of the bounds of traditional religion. And then secondly, to follow Jesus, he was going to shake you to the core. He was going to challenge your foundational beliefs and give you all sorts of things to be troubled over, to think about, to question, and to be motivated in some new and different directions. Jesus was pretty scandalous. Jesus really shook things up, and in many respects was calling us to break out of religion rather than just coming along with another set of religious ideals. If you think about some of the stories that we've looked at over the years and actually quite recently, the story of Nicodemus coming to Jesus in John 3. Nicodemus is a religious man. He's a Pharisee, and he comes at night. He's kind of afraid of being associated with Jesus, and he's got these questions for Jesus about show us the way, Jesus. What how should we inherit eternal life, and how can we enter the kingdom of God? And Jesus comes with some really surprising questions that make Nicodemus, surprising answers, and then questions that make Nicodemus say, how can this be? So Jesus really rattles him. And then think about the rich young ruler, a very famous story we've looked at many times. Again, comes to Jesus with earnest and says, how can I experience eternal life, this life of the kingdom that you're talking about? And Jesus says, well, follow the commandments. And he says, well, I've done those since birth. So here is a religious man, a man who's operated within the safety of religion. And Jesus says, well, one thing you lack, sell everything you have and come and give it to the poor and come and follow me. So in other words, Jesus is saying, like, your religion's not enough. It's something, but it's just not enough. There's more. And perhaps we all have that sense, or have had that sense, of there must be more to life than this. There must be more even to our experience of God than this. Other characters like Zacchaeus, who I think is sort of he embodies this sense of exploration. He's a tax collector. He's an outcast. His name ironically means innocent, but he's far from that. But he wants to see Jesus. He wants to see more. He has this sense that perhaps there's more truth out there that could even cause me to think differently about myself and about my own life. And he climbs a tree and he sees Jesus. He sort of embodies that seeking, if you like, by climbing the tree. And Jesus causes him to see himself in a completely different way. He breaks out of the mold of that he's been in, and his life is completely transformed. And then we have people from outside, totally outside of Jesus's religious tradition, coming to him. The Roman centurion, for instance, who would have been a pagan, a Roman pagan, who he really admires Jesus, and he one of his servants is sick, and he wants Jesus to heal his servant, and he gives incredible authority to Jesus. He's really curious, and he breaks out of his own religious tradition in order to approach Jesus. It reminds me a little bit of the story we looked at a few weeks ago of the Magi coming from the East, from a very different religion, and they come because they've seen this star that to them signifies that a Messiah is going to be born, a king is going to be born, and they come and worship Jesus. So our tradition and our scriptures and the person we are following, Jesus, are full of questions and encouragements to not stay where we are, but be open to our doubts, to be open to our questions, and to pursue truth, to seek it out, to be intentional about that. And that inevitably means some disruption in our life, But it can lead to incredible change. And to illustrate that, I'm going to bring in now a couple from our church, the Strikers, that's Ethan and Rebecca, and they're going to share a little bit about their journey and how some things have changed for them. So let's welcome them now. Hi, Ethan. Hi, Rebecca. Great to see you. Thanks for joining us this morning.
So hi, glad to be here.
We've been talking about how positive change can happen through curiosity, exploration, especially exploring our doubts and fears and seeing where those lead us. So Ethan, why don't you just share a little bit about your story, especially as it's related to doubt and you know, where that's taken you.
Sure. So I grew up in the Methodist Church and kind of went through the confirmation process. And that's where I really started to take my faith seriously when I was about 12 years old. And then in high school, my brother and I started attending a Bible church, which was a little more of a Baptist feel. And so faith was a huge part of my life. And I was always kind of like a philosophical, you know, thinker in terms of my Christianity. And then when I went to college, where Rebecca and I met, we were both involved in InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and faith was a huge part of our lives, certainly my life, you know, prayer every day, reading through the Bible, that kind of thing. And, you know, I would have doubts throughout my kind of upbringing, but in college, just being confronted with different conversations, different classes, I really started to question, what if all this is a, you know, a load of bunk, you know, like what, and I remember distinctly, even in a prayer meeting once, a friend of mine, we both had this same kind of very poignant doubts at the same time, like, what if this is all just made up? And, but then, you know, kind of worked through that. And then when we moved to Maryland in 99, we started going to a different church. And I remember singing this one worship song, you know, out of millions lost, you know, thank you for saving me. And of course, the emphasis is supposed to be on thank you. But I was thinking about the other side, like, what about all the not millions that were saved? And it made me question the justice and the love. How does that all fit together? And so I really started doubting the existence of God. And at the time, way that I've been brought up, or he doesn't exist at all. And so I started investigating, you know, universalism and things like that. It was really, like I said, my faith has always been a very, you know, philosophical and kind of a rational faith, if that makes any sense. And so I really had to work through some of those issues. Like, if God's all loving and he's all knowing, he's all powerful, how could people end up in, you know, hell for eternity? And that just didn't add up to me, and that's what started that doubt. And that's
where did that take you? I'm interested in a couple of things. Where did that take you, that journey? And then what was helpful to you on that journey?
So that took me, when I was doubting, you know, I didn't really know what to do, where to go. I didn't want to go to church anymore. You know, I would go to church and just be fed up with it. And I didn't want to talk to, you know, Christians about it. You know, people were in my church, they're very caring, very loving people. And they were concerned about me. You know, I was asking questions, and some people were, you know, oh, I have that similar kind of question. But a lot of people were like, why are you asking those things? And so that was frustrating to me. And so I just, I kept reading other things, and what was really helpful to me when I kind of came to a breaking point, and we'll get to that, I think, in Rebecca's story, where that kind of that tipping point happened, was finding other Christians that had those same questions and same doubts and didn't just accept the pat answers. Mm-hmm. And as, in particular, reading Brian McLaren's books, A New Kind of Christian, that really helped me a lot. It was like, oh, there's other Christians out there that have these same questions, but They don't just have the pat answers, and they don't just throw it all out. They're wrestling with these things. And then finding other people like Darren at church, you know, like when I met him, I was like, wait, you had that same question? Like it was like we were spiritual twins or something. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing really helped me to continue my journey.
Yeah. So you were at Cedar Ridge by this point. You'd moved from that other church to Cedar Ridge.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to. And I think Rebecca will touch on that her part of the story, but I had to. I couldn't. Again, I love the people. They were always just, you know, so nice and welcoming, but I couldn't be in a place where I had all these doubts, where I couldn't work them out, you know, in small group or with pastors or whatever. So I had to go somewhere else.
Yeah. So Rebecca, so tell us how was that for you? Were you on a similar journey? How did Ethan's journey impact you?
No, we were not on a similar journey. We were not similar at all. So for me, my background is not that much different than Ethan's. You know, I went to church my whole life, and I had a mom. My mom was a, and my dad, not so much. He wouldn't go to church or anything. But I was very obedient, and you know, and well, not very, but you know, I went to church and followed in my mom's footsteps, and then. Like Ethan said, we got really invested in InterVarsity when we went to college, and that was very formative to us. And it's been, you know, like just everything in our early relationship and our wedding, and it just was trying to follow the Christian way, you know, probably more in a cultural sense than anything else. But in any case, that's where we were. So I had this idea of what I thought Ethan should be, you know, this perfect Christian husband, and you know, the kind of guy that puts his arm around you during the church service and leads us in prayer and stuff at home. And so
this, I reset those expectations early.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So this pretty much shook my whole world, because I had put a lot of weight in who I thought he should be, what I expected. He was questioning God. So tell the Grey's Anatomy story.
Yeah. So yeah, it all came to a head as things normally do, watching television, and we were watching an episode of Grey's Anatomy. I don't remember exactly what it was, but you know, the afterlife.
McDreamy was involved.
I don't remember that part, but I remember that. We were watching it, and they were talking about the afterlife, and I said some snarky comment, like if that's even true, right? Like, how do we even know that's true? And
I lost it. Yeah. We'll just say that I lost it at that point, because for him to even be questioning eternity or questioning God's existence in that was, it just shook me to my core. It totally destabilized me. And I remember calling my friend who knew, you know, who went to college with us, and being like, what do I do with him? I don't know what to do with him. He's not what I expected that he would be. I know that's a very like newlywed thing to say, but it was really hard. So yeah, that's when he stopped going to church. And then that really hurt, because my whole life, my dad hadn't gone to church. It was my mom taking the kids to church. And then all of a sudden here I was doing that too without my husband. And so that also made me angry, because I had done everything right. You know, I had married the Christian man. I had planned this all out so perfectly, you know, and you know how that goes. Yeah. So I was left pretty scared and lonely at the time. But of course I still loved him. And anyway, so
how do you know?
That's for next week's sermon. So then Ethan read New Kind of Christian, and I remember opening up he was telling me about it, and I opened up the book flap, and it said, Brian McLaren's pastor of Cedar Ridge Church in Spencerville, Maryland. I was like, honey, this is in Maryland. We at least need to go. So, Cedar Ridge became a very safe place for Ethan, but it was different for me, and it was hard for me, because I was really invested in our previous church. Yeah. I had a really deep sense of belonging at the time. Like, I was kind of fine with all that. But then going to Cedar Ridge.
That must have felt like loss to you. That must have felt like loss to you.
It was a big loss. I think I had to mourn that. But it was a very intentional choice for Ethan to have any faith and for our marriage to have any kind of unity with that.
Yeah. So you're at Cedar Ridge. I mean, when did you come to Cedar Ridge? What sort of time?
2007.
2007. So that's some time, 13 years ago. Then you tell us what happened.
You were talking about the Small Prophets. I think it was the Book of Amos. Might have been the first.
Okay. But what, how was that?
What
happened then? Because I know you also, not long after that, you moved to England, right? With work. So tell us a little bit, here you're both in Cedar Ridge, you know, feels like loss for Rebecca, it feels like a better fit for you, Ethan, and then you have an uprooting moment of the whole family going over to the UK. So tell us a little bit about what happened through that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was like a breath of fresh air, and I was like, this is the only way. We actually also spent some time, a couple months out in California, and found an emergent church out there. And so it was like Cedar Ridge, this church, and then, out in California, and then England in 2008. So there was a few churches where it was like, for me, it was eye-opening. And I started, reading other books like Heretic's Guide to Eternity. That was one of my favorite. things like that, just really... It opened up a new world. And so I was just trying to eat it all up. Yeah. And I honestly don't remember how it was between us. Yeah. Like, I remember we were, in it together. And it was, we were in places that we could both be, but I don't remember exactly.
Because how it was a safe place, like for me, it's like a seed was planted at some point along the line that there could be a different way of thinking about all this, a different way of believing, a different way of reading the Bible. And it felt more organic and it felt more peaceful, I would say.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as destabilizing or uncentering as I expected it to be. It was actually pretty cool.
So there was that sense of loss, but coming to a church like Cedar Ridge and the church out in California was, you felt like you gained something as well.
Yeah, it really made me start to take a deeper look at my faith and start to ask questions. The best way I can describe it is it really started helping me take away a lot of baggage. Religious baggage from Christian culture, that kind of, at that point, that was kind of like dogma, the way, the expectations, the standards that I was supposed to maintain as a Christian. And I felt myself kind of just taking each one of those pieces and just evaluating them and saying, okay, is this worth it? Like, is this the way? Does this matter? And it really helped me to shed a lot of unnecessary baggage and weight. It was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. That's really cool. I mean, it's interesting that reminds me of Jesus, because Jesus was constantly removing baggage from people showed. Yeah. He had to challenge the Pharisees that they were always putting baggage on people. Religion tends to push people down, but Jesus is setting us free. So. Yeah. That's really cool. Like what would you say changed for you? So you're in this process, Rebecca, that in some sense you didn't choose, right? You're kind of, it happened to you in some way. How did you change? I mean, you've shared a little bit about maybe feeling lighter and freer. Yeah. What kind of change took place for you?
Yeah, well, it was kind of like... It's kind of like I would just glean little bits of wisdom, little bits of revelation from Cedar Ridge or from books that I was now reading. I remember reading Brian McLaren and Tony Campola's book of called Adventures in Missing the Point. We read that together.
Yeah.
And that was, they're just, again, all these different ways of looking at things. And it's, I don't know how to describe this better, but like, it's kind of like inside my mind was kind of like this, the inner workings of a combination lock. And every once in a while, something would like click in place and that pin would go into place is like, yeah, that's it. That's how it should be. And it gave me peace. It really gave me peace. And it gave me a lot of freedom to start using my brain. And I know that probably sounds bad, but in the past, a lot of the things that, you know, a lot of churches would justify things that were contrary to science and use verses like for the wiser than wisdom, you know, human wisdom and stuff like that. And I had a lot of inner tension with that, that I guess I had just pushed down so deep. So now I felt like I could really love God with my heart, soul, and mind more. But also, I also became okay with not knowing all the answers. And that, even that simple thing was new for me because just in the churches that I was raised, it was very important that you knew how to answer everybody's questions and everybody's doubts. And I kind of became okay with not knowing everything. And that was a big change too.
Yeah. So being more comfortable with uncertainty and
yeah.
Just in general. Yeah. Let's get back to you, Ethan. You know, what tensions? So it sounds like you caused some trouble, right? So tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, how did you feel about that kind of tension? I mean, there must be some internal tension, right, for you, because you're wrestling with faith and doubt and that kind of thing.
But
there's some relational tension, right, with...
Yeah.
Rebecca. So tell us a little bit about your side of that.
Yeah. And to be honest, if Rebecca wasn't there loving me and, you know, if it wasn't for Rebecca, I would have just left the church. Like that was the option for me. And I just wanted to give up on it all. And so, the tension for me then was, it kind of put me in this, place where I need to kind of figure this out somehow. How do I live? And you know, because so much of my behavior was governed by my faith, like if that faith is gone or totally different, how do I live? And so if God exists, live in such a way that it doesn't matter. That might sound strange, but you know, that's why I had to cling to that because I had to do something. I had to have some kind of a way of moving forward. Just how do I spend my time? And, you know, even something like doing like a service thing, you know, like caring for the bees or something. Like if God exists and God wants us to take care of the earth, then, you know, beekeeping is a good thing. If God doesn't exist, well, the earth's all we've got. And so we need to take care of our pollinators. And so, you know, there's just millions of, well, not millions, but lots of examples of those where I really had to deal with that for myself. And that was just so that I could, you know, move on.
Function,
that's the word. Yeah, it's just so that I could function. And then, you know, relationship-wise, I don't, you know, I think it was just, again, she kept me going to church so that I, you know, I really had to resolve my my questions in that context for this to work. And that was it's a really cool thing. It's almost, you know, I picture us being, you know, kind of just bound together. And I have to work this out in this context. And it really forced me to work out some issues that I didn't, like, sometimes it's like, I'm wasting my time thinking about this. Can I think about something else? You know, whether it's hobbies or, you know, learning stuff for work. And it helped me to take the time to try to work out some of these philosophical religious questions so that our relationship was still intact.
Yeah. What about for you, Rebecca? How was that?
Well, like you said, at first it was just really hard. I had to shift my expectations, not lower my standards, just shift my expectations. And just be very intentional that my love for him is giving is letting him go there and kind of lead us in that way. And it's pretty amazing that, like I'm so glad it all happened looking back at it, you know, and I just see God's hand and provision every step of the way. And so I'm abundantly grateful for that.
Yeah.
I think now I still deal with issues like, cause I think differently than some of my family members or some of my Christian friends that I grew up with or went to college with. And so that has a little tension there sometimes. And I think there are times too, like if in my old church, I would know how to raise my kids, you know, cause they wrote books and they, you know, they would say, this is what you do to raise up a child in the way he should go. And so now, again, we're not throwing all that out, but like, it just feels like it should take a different shape than, again, that religious kind of feeling to raising kids.
Yeah. So last question for you both, you know, same question to both of you. Like, what's been, throughout this whole journey, what would you say has been most helpful to you?
Yeah, for me, it's been books and, you know, and people. You know, I kind of mentioned it before, but just reading, and not just books, but you know, reading articles on, I mean, you know, people that have thought through these kinds of things before me, and it gave me new perspectives. Talking, you know, and it was such a contrast, you know, asking people in my old church, what do you think about this? And they would say, why do you ask these questions? And Matthew, you know, when I met with you 2007, when you said you were welcome to ask those questions here, that meant the world to me. That mm-hmm. just, and then again, Darren and other people that have met along the way is like, wow, we've had similar questions, similar struggles, or different questions and struggles, but it's okay. And embracing mystery is big. You know, I mean, I did want to at least have a theory about things. If I don't have the answer, I at least want to have a theory. But like my prayer life, like how do you have a prayer life if you're doubting God's existence? So a lot of my prayers would be, God, if you're there, if you exist. And then, you know, seeing things kind of play out in life where, you know, you see prayers being answered or maybe being and things just happening. There's a mystery there. Like, was that God? Was that, you know, and it was like, I think it is. And just embracing that mystery has been really helpful. And talking through that with people that are just patient with me and will challenge my thinking has been so helpful.
Yeah. Strikes me that's just not, we just need to know that we're not alone, right? That
yeah.
other people, whether it's through books or through relationships, it's like yeah. knowing that we're accepted, that there are other people who struggle and think like us or, you know, have asked the same question. So what about for you, Rebecca?
A lot of time. I think just what's been helpful is just time and being patient with the process. It's obviously not a night and day kind of fix. It took a lot of time, a lot of just opening my mind up to questioning is part of the process too. I think community helps a lot. I think it's a lot of conversations, just especially with Ethan. It's just like hundreds of conversations, just big and little. And so ultimately I'm so grateful because it really has drawn us closer together as a couple, and certainly made our marriage stronger, and I think in turn strengthened each of our faith individually.
Yeah, that's so cool that you've got each other. I mean, that's really precious that you have each other. You've
walked
with each other through this, and it's deepened your faith, deepened your connection. Okay, I was lying. I've got one last question, right? Which is, I think I know what the answer is, but would you go back? I mean, like, you know, as you look back on, because it's been painful and difficult, right? And when you think about where you are at now, if you could rewind and it would be, you know, go back to how it was, would you do that? Or has something happened that you feel you couldn't have got here without that?
I wouldn't change a thing. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's funny. You know, you can say that when you're looking back. I mean, that's just my thought.
Sure, sure.
And it was scary, and it was hard to work through. But I just can't imagine it any other way. way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm abundantly grateful for where we are now. I'm grateful that we're on this journey together, because I think if we had gone back, I don't want to think about what our journey would have been, you know?
Yeah. And it's been honest that I think that, I think that was just being honest with ourselves. That was another thing, a freeing thing, seeing other people do that. I was like, I have all these doubts and all this kind of stuff, but it's okay. You know, and just being honest with it instead of, you know, pushing them aside, you know, and really struggling with them. I think.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Thanks so much for sharing with us. Thank you for being so honest and real, and sharing your story with everybody. We really appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Something that really struck me about what Ethan and Rebecca shared was how different their journeys were in many respects. For Ethan, it was, you know, a crisis of faith, having questions, and then choosing to seek and to be proactive about those. For Rebecca, it was in some respects forced upon her because of her relationship with Ethan. And she obviously had to make some choices then. But it was a very different source of questioning. But what was common for both of them was how important relationships were, how important it was not to go on that journey alone. And that in fact, even though they're coming from different perspectives and have sort of arrived at this point from different directions, they are actually supportive of one another. They're with one another and helping one another on that journey. And I think that's something that we all need. You know, we have all kinds of questions, all kinds of doubts and fears and hopes. And we all come to this place from different directions, but we don't want to be alone. We don't want to move forward alone. And as we approach communion now, I wanted to just reflect a little bit on the fact that Jesus experienced aloneness, and Jesus experienced going into the unknown, into the darkness, if you like, and didn't hold back. Jesus didn't play it safe. When we think about Jesus dying, and obviously that's something that we particularly remember when we take communion together, one of Jesus's last experiences with, well, recorded for us before he went through his death, was when he went and prayed on the Mount of Olives. If we look at Luke chapter 22, it says, Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. So Jesus is very afraid. And I think he's afraid because I think he has a sense of what's going to happen. He has a sense that he's going to be executed. He seems to know that, and he doesn't want to do it. He says, take this cup from me. I don't want to go down this pathway. But he surrenders to God. He surrenders to a truth bigger than himself. He says, not my will, but your will be done. I think we often think Jesus knows what the outcome's going to be. He's going to be raised from the dead. And we've talked about that kind of thing before. Who knows what Jesus knew? It's very easy for us to imagine all kinds of things because we're looking back in retrospect. But Jesus is going into darkness here. He's afraid of it. He doesn't want to do it, it seems. He'd rather not do it, at least, let's say. But he moves into it, trusting God, trusting the enormity of God's love. And as a result of that death that he experiences, literally, there's resurrection and there's something new and more beautiful that comes out of it. And I think we can think about Jesus' example in this, rather than being afraid to go into the unknown, even when, our doubts and our fears and our questions might disturb us or disrupt us, I think we follow the Jesus' model and go into that unknown. We are intentional about it. That's a way we can change and experience new life. We can experience resurrection on the other side. So we're following Jesus' example, but we're also, because Jesus has kind of blazed that trail for us already, we're not alone. And that's, of course, something that we remember, especially through taking communion, that Jesus is with us. And Jesus is with us with all our doubts, with all our fears, with all our questions, and is reaching out a hand to us and saying, come on, let's go into the unknown. It's okay. There's resurrection there. There's new life there. That I can lift you to a higher place, a deeper place, a healthier place, rather than being afraid and just staying where we are and conserving and consolidating and protecting ourselves and perhaps protecting, you know, even our beliefs and our religion. We're free. We're free to follow Jesus. So let's remember that now, that Jesus is with us and Jesus has gone into the unknown before us as we take communion together.